Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I think we should start with the Heat, personally, because I was trying to remember. I know I played you once when it was super hot.
Yes.
But generally, to me, watching these guys playing this Heat, it sort of makes me feel happy that I'm not playing anymore. Do you feel the same way, or do you feel like, wow, I'd love to be out there?
Oh, absolutely not. It's yeah, much cooler in the commentary booth than it is on the court. But are they whining more than back in the day? I find the heat is a bigger factor nowadays, and they have the cold towels, and they have the shades, and they have the umbrellas, and the heat break. When we played, we didn't have all that.
Yeah, they also, Novak went off after the second set, changed his clothes. That was about 10 minutes.
Right.
He called the doctor a couple games into the third set on a changeover, left the court again. So he was definitely pacing himself. If by some chance it went to a four set, he'd have another break. So I guess they. What you're saying is they're coddling the players too much.
Yeah, they're using the
question
rules,
mark.
Right?
Let's talk about that. I mean, in our days it was as hot,
sure,
similar weather conditions, and yet we didn't have that many. What should I say? Outside help to feel more comfortable.
I guess you have to look at it and say, is the level of tennis higher because of the help they get from the trainers, whereas we play through injury, mm-hmm. You didn't get the trainer. Maybe the level. It's hard for us because we tried as hard as we could.
Yeah.
So we thought that level was high, but maybe it's helping the level, players to stay up there. They're also grown up with it. I mean, you grow up with having the trainer come in and massage my knee a little bit. I mean, why not?
Exactly. I mean, you got to take advantage of every rule there, right? Yeah. And not that I ever did
but
that.
But interesting thing, does it help?
Yeah.
Does the 10-minute break after three sets in the men, does that do anything for the player?
I think to get out of the shade, out of the sunshine, maybe, you know, the match before, a couple of days ago, they went to the cold bath, you know, they jumped. I think that can refresh a lot.
How about the poor guy on court 17? What?
I was just going to go. I mean, there are different rules.
That's why you want to be better.
Yeah.
See, there's another reason.
There's a reason.
You know, you get a favorable treatment. There's no question.
Yeah, but is that fine? I mean, we have all these rule changes, which I'm forward. Some of it is actually better for the game. But then they don't apply to all players.
Mm, sure.
Players on Ash and Armstrong have a huge disadvantage in every shape and form than a core player on 17.
Another interesting question. We see the best players in the world are still the ones that are that handle the heat the best, it seems. What is it about that? What I'm trying to say, well, I think the best players are the best because they're the smartest. They have most variety in the game. If they have to, they can do certain things. If you had to play from the baseline, Boris, all the time, you could. John, same thing. Stefan Edberg, same thing. You chose not to necessarily. And then you can deal with the heat because you can shorten the points in an intelligent way rather than just out of desperation.
I think it's more physical than ever. The ball is being struck harder. You have to make more explosive moves more often. I mean, I was going to say generally the points are longer, but I'm not sure that's the case anymore because the average rally's about five shots. So in some ways, it's difficult to know where it's headed. I think they've done this. I mean, remember when Matsuoka cramped, I think it was the early 90s, and it was painful to even watch, much less what he was going through. So that rule chain was made for a good reason.
Sure.
Now, of course, when you make rules, they're going to end up being abused. Mm. And in some ways, you asked whether the 10-minute break made a difference. Yeah, I think it makes a difference. I think when they've gone off at the end of sets for bathroom breaks, that could change the momentum, change their clothes. I mean, there's a lot more opportunity to do that, I think, than there is in the past. And that makes it a little more complicated. But as far as what you said, I mean, what are the best players? Did they seem to handle the Heat better? I mean, they're better players. They have more options to go to. But if I had to pick one guy that was most affected, I would go with Novak, who seems to, you know, be – he doesn't have any extra weight, obviously. Right. Not that these guys have a whole lot. But it seems like Nadal energizes in the Heat. Roger, apparently, for years, trained in Dubai a lot in the Heat. But to me, Novak's the one that's most vulnerable in these conditions. He's the best one, to me, on this surface when they're all playing their best. Mm. But when it's like this, I would say that he drops down a little.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. What do you guys think of the shot clock? Serve clock, sorry. We're not talking basketball. Serve clock, 25 seconds.
I like it. I'm a big fan. I mean, I was just watching the Novak match and then obviously yesterday the Rafa match, and once they crossed the 30 seconds, or within 25 seconds, the umpire immediately said time violation. There was no arguments. They accepted it, point taken, on to the next one. I think that's a great addition, talking about changing the rule to make the game better.
Mm-hmm. Well, you want to make the game a little quicker, but I mean, there's still some gray areas there because the umpire calls a score, then he writes it on his piece of paper, then he starts the clock. So it's not really a 25-second serve clock. It's more like a 30, 35-second. Right. And what happens when the guy throws up a ball and catches it? They stop the clock. So you could go down to 3, 2, or 1 and then catch it, and then they don't seem to know what to do. Shouldn't it be, look, you catch the ball, bad luck. So that's they don't do it when they're at the end of between first and second serve. Shouldn't there be, to me, 10 or 15 seconds only between first and second? They don't turn on a clock then. So I guess they've made the first step, and nice. I think that's good overall, but they've got to keep working at it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the semifinal at Wimbledon this year with Novak and Rafa. And Novak was bouncing the ball 28 times. Sometimes, I mean, you, as a commentator, you weren't crazy. I think you were the player or the spectator. And Rafa takes a long time as well. So I think that is the first step in the right direction, just to make the game, make everybody more aware that there are a certain amount of seconds available until you got to serve.
What reminds me, you just mentioned Wimbledon and that incredible match that followed that Isner-Anderson match that went 26-24. And then I thought, okay, please, now, especially in the heat like here, and you have in Australia and the physicality, the French playing on clay, when are they going to all decide to have a tiebreaker in the fifth set, 6-6 in the fifth? I don't even agree with the 9-6, 12-6. I mean, that would be, I suppose, a step in the right direction. But having these guys laid it out long enough that it should be a tiebreaker in all four of them?
Absolutely.
I'm in favor of a tie break, not necessarily a 6-6 on grass. You know, sometimes it goes fast. But the latest at 12-12, you know, that mean, you don't want to see another 26-24 or Mahu Isner 76-8. That's the least thing we need. So, but a tie break eventually, I think here at 6-6 at the French, it's open. Yeah. It's open play in Paris.
No tiebreakers in three of the four.
So I think that is a problem.
There should be one because Isner and Anderson, I mean, eventually you're not even watching certain games. If you at least knew there was a tiebreaker that's going to end this match at 12-12, I don't mind watching it, but I was watching it live, and I'm like, am I going to sit there till 12 or 20 or 30? So I lose focus on it, but at least put one. But I actually agree. I think it's time. 6-6. Take it away.
When a fan yells out at like 17-17 in the fifth, somebody win, that's when you know a change needs to be made. And also it affected the final because Anderson didn't have much left in the final. It affected the match that was played between Nadal and Djokovic because to me, I mean, it was a great match, but they played three sets and then they had to stop because there's another rule that you can't play past at the All England Club past 11. Because the town wants it shut down.
Hold on. I live in Wimbledon, so I'm.
So you understand that you needed to get your beauty sleep. Yes. But to me, I think Nadal would have won that had they played all five, you know, that best of five all in one night. Now, they came back and two sets were played, and it was an incredible match, and we were happy to see it. But it affected the outcome of a couple of matches down the road, so...
I mean, it's no good for nobody, even for Anderson, because he can't play the next day.
Right.
It affects the audience, it affects the spectator, it affects everybody involved, including the winner, who should be looking forward to the final, but it's humanly impossible after playing for so long, even with a day's rest, that you're in some sort of decent shape to play Wimbledon.
Well, he beat Federer, and what was that?
Four and a half, yeah.
That was late in the fifth. Yeah. So, and then he had to go beat Isner. So, I mean, you got to think of it's like when you hit a shot, you think, okay, I'm going to hit a shot in a certain area, but I got to figure out where the other guy's going to hit the next one. Mm. You got to think ahead. It's like a chess match, and we got to try to help these players so that when it really matters, when hopefully the audience is at its biggest, you know, they're going to be able to play their best.
Absolutely.
So you're all in favor for a tiebreaker in the deciding set. We wouldn't agree at 6 or 9 or 12, but definitely a tiebreaker.
Definitely.
Yeah. Definitely a tiebreaker for sure. An interesting story has with Nick Kyrgios here, because that's gotten the most media attention when he got coached or whatever he did
by the chair umpire.
And obviously that tells you that, do we need more personalities, characters in the game? Did the umpire do the right thing? That's besides the point. What defines a personality, though? That's the, because Nick Kyrgios is a personality, but he's not. He's a quitter. He doesn't try all the time. So John is a perfect example.
Well, he's both. You know, he is a personality. He brings some interest to it. Unfortunately, he's got this fear of failure, I believe, and he's too afraid to go out there and give it his best shot, and that he'll be thought of in less of a fashion. I completely disagree with his thought process, because to me, you get a lot more respect in a locker room if you go out and give it your best effort. And generally, almost every time, some good will happen from that down the road if you're able to go out and consistently give your best effort. And it's becoming, you know, I dare I say it's even becoming embarrassing to him that he can't even go out and give his best at the U.S. Open.
I mean, I like the guy. I mean, he's got off the court. He's funny. He's witty. But I'm getting a little bit tired talking about the tennis player and the curious. I want to see him win.
Sure.
He has it. He should grow up faster. The next generation, so 2 or 3 years younger, is starting to overtake him. I want to see him create stories because he wins Wimbledon or because he has an unbelievable 5-set match at the US Open, not because an umpire had to help him overcome a terrible moment.
Just think of that for a second. Now, I've had my fair share of problems with umpires, but it got so bad, so embarrassing, you know, the effort he was giving, that an umpire of all people got down off the chair, went to him on the changeover in his chair and said, "Hey, man, are you okay? What's going on here? Hey, you know, I've seen you do better than this. You know, I've seen you play better." Encouraging this guy. I was really happy the guy did that in a way.
I'm agreeing.
I mean, and I don't think he should be banished like he's been on court 34 or whatever he's been thrown in the junior matches. He should be rewarded for actually, they were so desperate that he felt the need to do this. This is unbelievable. One, that he did it, and two, that I'm defending an umpire.
Well, he should have had.
And three, that he coached Kyrgios to come back and win that match after being down a set in a break, in a way.
I think the only mistake he did was to go down to Nick, because the look of the umpire sitting in this chair and Nick looking up at the umpire, and then he can talk down to him and say, "I really like you, Nick." He can say whatever he wants, but the picture, the vision we have is the umpire on his knees, basically. Yeah. Begging Nick to do it. But anyway, that's not the personality. People confuse that. A personality is, for example, John. You're an obvious personality. John's a different kind of personality in the world. But the personality is the one that gives 100%. And we talk about, they're not personalities anymore. Yes, they are, but they got to give 100%. Then you can do whatever you want. That's why, to me, Simona Halep is, I don't agree with the way she behaves sometimes, but she's becoming a personality because she cares. And I think that's what we're missing, is we want to see the players care. And they can break rackets, I don't care. But the Nick Kyrgios personality, I'm not looking forward to, because I think it's too good a game and it's bringing it down a little bit. If he was trying and winning, love it that he hits balls between his legs and he's funny with the crowd and all that. But that the ingredient is trying your best. And then add the personality.
Is that the problem with the young generation?
Seems to be.
Is it one of a few that have the talent, but something is missing that we would call you know, fighter spirit or play until the end or you know, let it all hang out on the court. That's, I find, with some of the younger players missing. They all have great shots and power. They're tall. On good days, they're unbeatable. But on bad days, they're terrible.
I think that's part of why you see these top three dominate so much, because they know what it takes. They've been there. They've done that. They've continued to do it. They've learned from, you know, their past matches, their years on the tour, and they're taking advantage of these guys. And I hope you see a couple of these young. You mentioned some of the young bucks, you know, like a Shapovalov. He's got some energy and personality. Demonor. You know, a little guy, but you talk about a guy that plays with some fire and, you know, goes out and competes. Those are admirable qualities.
Tsitsipas, same thing.
Tsitsipas. You know, these guys are going to be top players. Hachinov, you know, made a name for himself, a bigger name for himself. Mm-hmm. Could be an incredible player. And you hit it the nail on the head. These players are passing Kyrgios by. I don't know if he's capable at this point. He's only 23. I hope and pray that he does. You know, I was coaching him at Laver Cup, this new event that's sort of like the Ryder Cup. And he's a great guy. And he's actually a great team guy. And he inspired some of his teammates, and he played great. And he made it a more exciting event. And he's the type of person that can do well in those situations. But when he gets out there by himself, boy, he just falls to pieces.
Give me a remedy for Sasha Zverev. We haven't mentioned him. He's only 21 years old. He's been playing world-class at the Masters Series, at the regular tour, but something is lacking in a Grand Slam. What is your opinion?
Well, I know that you were pretty close to that situation, being involved with the Federation, and I believe that there was discussion about you guys working together, which I thought could be helpful. Now he's got Ivan Lendl. You can see it doesn't happen overnight. So far, to me, I mean, what it boils down to, one is he's choked in the big situations, the slams. And I think he questions himself, like, physically, his movement not the same as some of these younger guys, the top guys, and also how long he can last and, you know, in best of five. And that's gotten in his head. And because of that, he gets sort of in a shell a little bit. And he just, to me, I'm trying to remember a great match that he's played in the slam. So there hasn't been that many first-class matches, big wins that he's had. So that I'd be a little bit worried if I was in the Zverev camp at the moment. I still think it will happen because, you know, these guys that are out there now, Novak and Rafa and Roger, they're not going to be there forever. And so that door is opening for these young guys. You could see they're all trying to make the breakthrough, but they couldn't do it here. You keep waiting. Who's going to beat these top guys?
I think he got stuck. I think he was on his own. I mean, he was going up, and then he hired Juan Carlos Ferrero, who's obviously a great coach. But I believe that when you're a young player, you're on your own path, and at least happened to me. And I'm going to listen to my coach, but not necessarily that much when it comes to tactics. I'm playing you, and I'm going to feel my way. And I think you have to make your mistakes to learn from them. You have to make them yourself. Mm-hmm. And he was on his way. He was playing well when he won Rome.
Yeah.
Last year, he beat Federer in Canada. Federer was injured, but he was on his way. He was winning easily.
Yeah.
Suddenly, there's another voice in there. Whether Ferrero is a good coach or not is irrelevant. It's not Ferrero. But to put somebody in there, another voice that he suddenly might be listening to, should I be listening to it? I think there was no reason to bring in a Grand Slam champion as a coach. Now, it's a desperate move because he needs to do something right now, because otherwise these guys you were talking about, John, they're going to pass him by. To me, Lendl seems to be the perfect guy. It's not going to happen overnight, but I think he never found out what kind of tennis tactically he wants to play, is most effective, and he doesn't do it consistently enough. Because it goes from being aggressive to then falling all the way back. There's no imagination. There's no feeling, his own feeling.
When he played Chorich last year here, it was like a junior match. Yeah. You know, he's pushing so badly, so uptight. So I think Mats is absolutely right. He's got to figure out what he does best. And he's got to assess it against each person he plays. Sometimes he just seems like he's out there not doing a whole lot of thinking. So I imagine that Lendl, who's obviously a guy that, you know, every detail would be in place, I would suspect is going to help him.
So I was just going to say, so Lendl could be the guy that takes him over the hump in the Grand Slam.
Could
because
be.
Obviously
could be,
in the Masters Series, he's doing well. Yeah.
I think so.
God, but I have to root for Lendl again to be successful so I can have Zverev, you know, reach his potential. First, Murray never won it. He wins three. So he set himself up nicely to be the coach. What do you think about the Davis Cup changes?
First of all, I was surprised that he got a majority. Mm-hmm. I was surprised that one of the best football players in the last 10 years took over a tennis role.
Yeah.
I imagine John McEnroe now talking to the UEFA and the World Cup and bringing.
I do want to turn around the USA team in the World Cup. I want to.
Yeah.
Because we didn't even make it this year.
Yeah. But just the fact that a football icon takes over such an important role in tennis. I don't know yet. I mean, I'm a big fan of Davis Cup. You know, I'm taking care of Davis Cup for Germany for this year. The atmosphere we had in Spain was unique. Rafa was in his element.
Great
we played
tie.
In a bull ring. I mean, one of the best ties I've ever been part of. Unfortunately, we lost 3-2. So to take this away and play the Davis Cup at a neutral city will never be the same atmosphere.
Right.
Now, I understand it's driven by money. I get that. But it's driven by money because the value is so high. Now, with this new format, potentially you're going to bring the value down. So I'm very surprised that it happened, and I'm very, you know, suspicious in a way that this has a future.
Well, I think it's ironic, I'll use that word, that it was after this Laver Cup, which seemed very successful, and then the ATP announcing they're doing their own team thing before Australia, and then suddenly there's this drastic change when for 40 years we've been asking for changes in the date. Now, I like the home-and-home ties too, but we used to play the finals in December.
Yep.
And then they'd ask you to play 6-8 weeks later, and it could be in the other side of the world, and that's you don't even get time to enjoy the accomplishment you just made winning the Davis Cup, and you already got playing. So they could have had the two finalists have a bye. They could have done it every other year. They could have done so many things differently before having to resort to something as drastic. I'm surprised that they decided to try this. I mean, it seems like a bit of a desperate move.
I mean, it's too important for tennis. Imagine David Goffin. So David Goffin gets to the quarterfinals of the French Open. How many Belgians tune into that? I'm not sure. Belgium gets to Davis Cup final, semifinal. Every Belgian, soccer fans, ice hockey fans, they're watching Belgium play tennis. I would not be sitting here if it wasn't for Davis Cup, because that's what my dad watched. So I think if you lose the home and away, I think you lose the interest, the amateur interest. A big part of tennis is gone because it's on national TV. Of course, I'm watching it. I only watch Wimbledon and Davis Cup because it's my country. So I think taking away the home and away in the beginning, good. But the semis and the finals, surely Belgium against Andy Murray's Scotland or Great Britain has to be played in Scotland or in Belgium, because it's huge for tennis. But once they go to Paris and play that.
Wait, hold on a second.
So you got to be some home and away at the end, I believe.
But because the top players weren't supporting it. I mean, it's been that way a long time. Murray picked and chose his spots, and they got a win, and Federer and Wawrinka finally win for the first time in 100 years. Switzerland, neither one plays the next match defending.
But that's because they don't want to play the first round.
Well, no, because
they
didn't want to play. Period. So they you don't think it was deliberate, so they wouldn't have to play maybe another 4 weeks. I mean, there's been numerous occasions by numerous players where they've chosen not to do it, and you had to change something.
But if you imagine if Switzerland gets to the final, okay, and it's in Zurich, and there is 25,000 people, Roger Federer will play the Davis Cup final.
No, of course,
but he would do that. Well, but he doesn't want to qualify for 3 weeks to get to that point.
So we would agree that it needed some change.
Oh,
it needed some improvement, but not change it so dramatically that it takes away the core of Davis Cup, which is home and away matches throughout the whole year. I mean, you can argue about the length of the weekend. Put it 2 out of 3, maybe over 2 days, but taking away a semifinal and final, as you said, and have it in a week. They talk about Lille or Madrid next year. What happens if there's countries that are not France or Spain in a semifinal?
Surely they're going to change the rules. It's just a trial period for a few years, wouldn't you think?
I mean, I would think so. It sort of depends on what happens with the other events.
It's like labor.
To me, it's the bigger problem with tennis again is that the players and the powers that be aren't on the same page. Mm. You know, we have our Masters series, which we have more. We supposedly those are our events. Well, are they our events? Or are they our events along with our partners, the tournament directors? Right. Why are we in partnership with tournament directors? To me, that shouldn't be. Why aren't we partners in the Grand Slams, for example? Why aren't we involved in the decision-making process with all these important issues? And I believe they're doing what's best. I don't blame them in a way. They do what's best for the U.S. Open here, the USTA. The All England Club does what's best for them. This is sort of like, oh, okay, this is just, you know, for the little countries. Yeah, it's a big deal for a little country like Belgium or, you know, when Switzerland's never won, Argentina never won in 100 years. Huge deal that they were able to do it. But that's why we should keep it to a certain degree. And then we could have these other events that could be different things. I mean, there's still all these years, 40 years I've been around the game, and I still don't feel like we're able to sort of coexist and improve ourselves.
Yep. Well, there's not one governing body. There are two or three.
The self-appointed commissioner of tennis needs to become the appointed commissioner of tennis.
There are three or three federations, systems, organizations that run the game. That speaks for the popularity. That speaks for the importance of tennis. But it speaks also for the fact that because of that, it can't be probably organized for all interests.
Okay. Last thing we have to touch on, rivalries. We're talking about rivalries. What defines a rivalry to you guys? Because Borg McEnroe is one of the most famous rivalries there is. How many times did you play in a Grand Slam?
We only played in a Grand Slam? Oh, boy. I'd say we played four times.
That's nothing.
Yeah. I wish he kept playing.
It was his fault because he quit at 25. For me, rivalry is when one against two in a Grand Slam final. And it's hopefully multiple times. That's the match I'd like to see most. So,
but there has to be. Djokovic won, Murray 2. That rivalry is not as interesting, obviously, as Federer 1, Nadal 2. You know what I mean? What defines the contrast of styles?
Contrast of styles, behavior. Making each behavior, even their look.
Yeah.
Are they making each other better?
Right.
Which I think has been the case with Federer and Nadal. I think it's been the case with Djokovic and Nadal. To some extent, Djokovic, Federer. So to me, that's why Murray's like, you know, I agree that the Murray-Djokovic, which for a while seemed to be what was going to replace Federer and Nadal, didn't have the same level of interest. Because that's what they bring to the table, not just on a tennis court. It's what they sort of represent to the sport and the way they play, the way they act, the way they look, that all adds up to something magical, you hope.
But I just, regardless of the name, I always find proper rivalry is when one and two played each other in a Wimbledon final, US Open final, you name it. That, for me, is what tennis is about. That happened a number of times with Rafa, with Roger, with Novak, with Andy, who doesn't matter who's one and two, but it happened a multiple times. And that's why tennis is more popular now than it was 10 years ago. Now, hopefully in the future, that's the same. On the women's side, we have that problem. Think of Serena one day deciding to have another baby. Then there's a big void in the women's game, and I want to see one and two in Grand Slam finals. Mm. And I don't see it enough on the women's side. And I find that's why everybody's screaming Serena left, right, center. On the men, we're blessed with it. On the women's side, we're running out of it.
What rivalries are there in the women? I mean, it's Serena.
Yeah.
Serena and Venus.
Well, but even there, you know, that's always been a difficult one. So what would you could or what do you point to the last 3, 4, 5 years?
That's great rivalry. There isn't one.
Well, you can say Halep Wozniacki for about a week. When they had the Australian Open final, so that was
Kerber,
good.
Kerber Serena, I
Kriba,
guess.
Serena, little, you know.
She's beaten her 22 finals, but.
Yeah, but that is a problem. Yeah. That is a problem for women's game, and that's why the men's game is so successful. Because of, you see, one and two for years and years playing each other on the biggest tournaments.
That's the big question to me is, obviously, Federer can't play for much longer, a few more years maybe. Nadal, Novak, they have a few more years. What's going to replace them? Okay, it's not going to be a new Federer. is it rivalries that are going to replace? Is that what we're looking for? Is tennis going to be as popular because of the rivalry between Shapovalov and Tsitsipas? And
do they all have to like each other? It
seems no, like they don't have so to much. Like each other, do they?
It seems.
Did you ever hug a guy after he beat you?
No.
Not even me, right? Not even you.
Especially you.
Look,
what is wrong with them?
I think that is a very important question, Mats. You thought after McEnroe, Borg,
yeah,
it was impossible to replace it. Then you have a guy like Jimmy around, Jimmy mm-hmm. Connors. Mm-hmm. Then you have a guy like Lendl around. Then our generation comes, Mats, you and me. So I think eventually tennis takes care of itself. We just got to give it time. There isn't another Federer.
Basically, we don't need a superstar. We need good rivalries.
Exactly.
That obviously, they're superstars, but we don't need a dominant player like Federer.
We need these young guys to step up and beat these guys, you know, too, which hasn't happened
at before
all.
They quit.
Before they quit. When they're, you know, obviously still like Novak, you see he's got his game back. And you see Rafa still, he's healthy. Someone, like, somehow, some way, like a guy like Team would beat him at Roland Garros.
So for sure.
That would be, you know, something.
I mean, I was very impressed with Karen Khachanov the other night, Rafa. That was one of the best matches I've seen this year. Mm. The guy's 22. He comes from a very interesting country. And you know, he has personality. He has the spirit. He has everything that Nick Kyrgios doesn't have right now.
Absolutely. Mm.
Well put. And to all a good night.
Good night.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.